Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello and welcome to the Game Day podcast from TalkSport with me, Sam Matterface, the former Ipswich, Charlton and Ireland midfielder Matt Holland, and TalkSport's football correspondent Alex Crook, as Newcastle start their quest to ambush the title race.
It away straight to Bruno Guimaraes, who dinks it over the goalkeeper, into the net. It's a glorious finish. It's an absolute catastrophe defensively for Norwich City. It's easy street for Newcastle. It's a nightmare for Norwich.
What is Tim Krul doing?
Yes, the Toon are involved in the title already, because their next two games are Liverpool and Manchester City, who both have big fixtures on TalkSport this Saturday. Liverpool's trip to Tyneside and Manchester City go to Yorkshire as Jesse Marsh's team are accused of being dirty leads by Patrick Vieira. Have we heard that before? There's a huge weekend of relegation threatened football. Watford against Burnley, they meet at Vicarage Road. And Frank Lampard welcomes Chelsea to Goodison Park. Tottenham, Arsenal and West Ham wait till Sunday. And United don't play till Monday night against Brentford at home. It's all on the best Premier League preview of the weekend. It's the Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
This is Game Day.
And a big hello to TalkSport's football correspondent Alex Crook and Matt Holland. Hello, how are you?
Good morning, very well.
Good morning, good morning.
Hi, Sam. Hope you had a good birthday.
I did. I had a very good birthday. I became older, which is always a
even a bad older. Thing.
You're not even older. I'm only 44 years of age. It's not like really ancient.
You'd have done well to get younger.
Yeah, I know. I would have liked to have done that. If you can find a solution to that, that would be brilliant. Season drawing to a close now, so we're spending much more time on games that matter rather than games that don't matter. And obviously, Aston Villa fall into that category quite a bit. I did see this week, though, that Steven Gerrard has got a new favourite curry house in Birmingham. It's called Ashes. It also served the likes of Ed Sheeran and Tom Cruise. Now, Crook, you're a bit of a curry connoisseur, aren't you, really? I mean, well, actually, that might be pushing it. You're just a frequenter of curry houses.
I was in one last night, actually.
Were you? Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. What's your favourite dish?
I tend to go for a balti.
A balti.
Yeah, a mixed meat balti, which is chicken, lamb and prawn.
Of course it is, yeah, yeah. And how much would that cost you? I mean, just that individual dish, how much? $8.95 or something like that?
A bit more than that, maybe about £12.
Oh, £12. And what about you, Matt? What's your favourite dish of choice?
Chicken jalfrezi. I like a bit of heat in my curry.
Yeah, okay. All right, I like a jalfrezi. And what's that? $11.95, something like that?
Yes, something like that.
Yeah, okay, right, okay. What do you make of the fact that Steven Gerrard ordered a prawn dish that cost £24.95?
Well, he's got expensive tastes, hasn't he, Steven Gerrard?
King prawn, really? Marinated in yogurt, cheese and cardamom. And he loved it so much that, a bit like Crookie, he ordered a second plate.
that's impossible. Curry is quite filling.
Yeah.
Crookie might get through two dishes, but I definitely wouldn't.
So he spent £50 on prawns. Now the Villa fans know he's got deep pockets. They'll help you be shelling out on players in the summer. Okay.
He needs to, by the way, because at one stage you were hailing him as the second coming, and yeah. I did say the results aren't great. How's that league table looking?
Next season. Right, let's get into it. Liverpool can't afford any fog on the Tyne.
And it's kickoff time for another game day on TalkSport.
Well, we've certainly got a title race on now.
Headed out of harm's way as far as Salah! 3-0 to Liverpool. Unstoppable shot by Mo Salah. Joelinton!
buries the header home.
The situation in the table is clear for us, so no news.
Across for Watkins. Watkins taps it in. The flag stays down. And that surely is all 3 points for Aston Villa.
Oh, what a start for Norwich City.
Up steps Rafinha then. And it's down the middle. And Leeds United hit the front.
Corner of the penalty area. Early cross. Sterling must score and does score.
We're going to play every game a final to give opportunity to play another one until the end. We're going to challenge and then the end.
It ain't over till it's over. There's no league like the Premier League to tell you that.
Fresh from Champions League action on Wednesday night, straight to Tyneside for Klopp and co as they kick off at 12:30 when they take on Newcastle live on Talk Sport. Now, the plea for a move to a later in the day kickoff fell on deaf ears here, although there has been an adjustment for next week. They're going to play much later after their away game in Spain. Newcastle have won six in a row at home. How do the Toons stop a team that have won 12 of their last 13 in the league, though, Matt?
Almost impossible, isn't it, at the moment? I was at Man City a couple of weeks ago and we were discussing the title race, and I said that both City and Liverpool will most likely win all their games. And my mind hasn't changed on that. I think this is clearly a difficult game because of the way Newcastle are playing. But I still feel as though they've got the ability, even though they've got games coming thick and fast with the European games, and I still feel as though Liverpool got the squad now, the ability to rotate, to change things up. They've got goals from all over the team. They've got Thiago in what at the moment is just imperious form. He's pulling the strings left, right and centre. I think they've scored 135 goals in all competitions this season, Liverpool. So I just don't see anybody stopping them and Man City at the moment. So whilst Newcastle are playing well, Bruno Guimarães has been superb. Joe Linton in midfield scoring a couple last week. They've won four on the spin. They're playing well. They're playing with confidence. Eddie Howe's clearly got a plan, a tactical plan. I just don't see Liverpool slipping up.
It's a tough test, not only because they're playing well, Newcastle, but also the placing of the fixture in between these two games. It has an effect, doesn't it, Crook?
Yeah, it's bound to, although they made pretty light work of Villarreal, so I don't think there's too much to fear in the second leg. I think they've got 1.5 feet firmly in the Champions League final. I slightly disagree with Matt. I think if Liverpool are going to drop points, and I think it is a possibility, it will be in these next two games. Newcastle away, followed by Tottenham at home. And by virtue of the fact they're so imperious at Anfield, I think there's an argument to say this is perhaps their toughest Premier League game that they have remaining. Newcastle high in confidence. The crowd will be up for it. I think they've won 9 or 10 of their last 13 games. They're a team reborn under Eddie Howe. I think this is a really tricky fixture for Liverpool. And this could well be the game for me where the title race is decided. I don't think Newcastle will win. I could see them nicking a point.
And the thing is, this is St James's Park, and you know it's going to be oozing with optimism, noise, and what can only be described as a dizzying run which Eddie Howe has taken them on, this journey that they've been dragged away from relegation trouble, now eyeing up a place in the top half of the table. You mentioned Joe Linton in fantastic form, Bruno Guimarães in fantastic form, Murphy's playing well, Almiron is playing well, Wood's playing well, Newcastle absolutely flying. They get an early lead and the place will erupt. So settling in and not allowing Newcastle to get going is probably the most important thing that Jurgen Klopp and his team can do, isn't it, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, the early kickoff is the other thing against Liverpool, the 12:30. I think that's something that Jurgen Klopp's already sort of said that he's not happy with.
I don't think he would have said anything about that. He doesn't usually mention it.
No, of course.
He's not one to complain.
No, he wouldn't have picked up on that. I doubt he even knows what time the kickoff is.
I think it's 12:30.
I think it might be.
Yeah, I hope they turn up at 12:30 because it does kick off then. Look, I just see with Liverpool a team that isn't fazed by anything, you know, and the quality that they've got. So even if they were to go a goal down, even if the crowd were, and they are going to be up at St James's Park, it just won't faze Liverpool. They've been through it. They know that they've had these experiences. Under Jurgen Klopp, they've just developed and got stronger and got better. And they just run all over teams. And I honestly just don't. So I know Crookie say that this is their most equipped. It is their most equipped game. Spurs next week. Spurs haven't had a shot on target for two games. I just don't see, you know, how are they going to break Liverpool down? So I just think that at the moment, they just look unstoppable. The only team that can stop Liverpool is Man City.
Yeah. The last seven wins for Newcastle United, and look, they've been on a brilliant run. Their last seven wins are Brentford, Brighton, Southampton, Wolves, Leicester, Crystal Palace and Norwich. They've tripped up against the very best, though, haven't they? Under Eddie Howe, they've played five matches against the Premier League's top five and they've lost a lot and they've scored only twice. So maybe we might be overestimating them a little bit, Crook.
Yeah, possibly, but there've been some unlucky performances in that time. They ran Chelsea pretty close. Was it Kai Havertz in stoppage time who won that game? So
I can't see the details.
but if there is an issue, it probably is the lack of goal threat against the top side. I think they'll stifle Liverpool for long periods. But Liverpool should have too much shooting power. But as you've said, the 12:30 kickoff does come into play. I've just got a hunch. It's probably totally wrong and Liverpool will turn up and win 3-0. I've just got a hunch they could drop points here.
This is the same guy who said that the title race was done in January and that the relegation was all finished in October, I think it was.
He had Newcastle down, by the way. They hadn't won in the opening 14 games. Yeah. I'm sure Crookie at some point, if we look back at some of these podcasts, I'm sure Crookie said Newcastle are down.
He said everything at one point during the course of the year. More flip-flops than Havaianas. Although Newcastle, I've got to admit, you know, looking at their games against Norwich, Palace, Leicester, and Wolves, in which they've won all four of those matches, they've conceded one goal. They've conceded just one goal.
Yeah.
And lots of people talked about Eddie Howe coming in and the fact that he couldn't organise a defence. And you've done that before, Crook, as well. You've mm-hmm. criticised him for recruitment and defence, but his recruitment and his defensive setup has been fantastic.
Yeah, but he's changed slightly the way that he coaches the team. Jason Tindall, I think, now is almost a designated defensive coach, which wasn't the case at Bournemouth. So I think he deserves quite a bit of credit for that as well.
But as we've mentioned and we've spoken about, he's changed his whole, the way he operates. He's looked at himself. He's gone abroad. He's worked out how to be a manager of a bigger club. And that is not doing everything. Whereas before, I mean, you know, I've told this story before about how he organised the end of season do when they were promoted from League One to the Championship, rang me up and asked me to host it. And I was like, surely you shouldn't be doing this. It should be somebody else calling me and asking me to do that. Do you know what I mean? It's like a bit crazy. 5:30, it's Leeds against Manchester City. Manchester City ripped Real Madrid a new one at least twice on Tuesday night and then sewed them right back up again with gift after gift. It could have been 8-2 that game. It wasn't. And as a result, they have to be very careful at Leeds, a side who have caused them issues in the past, Matt.
I'll refer back to Newcastle against Liverpool. I don't see anyone stopping Man City either. They still scored four against Real Madrid. It's not like they turned up and had loads of chances and didn't score.
But they could have scored 104, couldn't they? I mean, they were that dominant in that first half that when it got to half time, everybody was a little bit like, "What? It's not 8-0."
So what makes you think they're going to go to Leeds and not score four?
Maybe because they're going to change the personnel and actually they've still got a job to do in Madrid next week, whereas I actually think they probably could have finished that game off in the first leg if they were a little bit more disciplined and concentrated.
Yeah, possibly. And the game should... The tie should be over. The tie should be done and dusted. And I still think they'll go to Real Madrid and get through. I don't see them failing to get through either.
And I hope so. And I really hope that we have an all-English final because I think that is just... It's where we are at the moment in terms of, I think that's how dominant the league is and the teams are. And I also think these two teams deserve it because they are that good.
They're the best two teams in Europe at the moment. And we've seen, I think, two all-English finals in the last three Champions Leagues as well. So this will be 3 and 4. So it just, you're absolutely right. It goes to show the dominance of the Premier League, where we're at. And we have got the two best teams in Europe at the moment in Man City and Liverpool. They are above everybody else. So I don't see Man City slipping up at Real Madrid. I know he'll make changes. And he'll perhaps feel as though he hasn't got as many options as Liverpool to make those changes.
Well, it's funny you should say that because Pep does keep telling us that he doesn't have the numbers to make the changes that others do. Imagine having spent £1.7 billion since 2012 and not having the numbers. Stones is injured. Walker's got a problem. They're relying probably too heavily at this stage of the season on Fernandinho. But they left Grealish, Ake, Sterling on the bench on Tuesday night. So they probably should be okay, Crook.
They'll be fine. I think it was a good point for Leeds. Crystal Palace, a point certainly closer to safety, a clean sheet as well. But this is a massive step up in terms of opposition. And I think there's a bit of kidology from Pep suggesting that he hasn't got the strongest squad. Maybe it's a message to the owners this summer that perhaps he needs more than just Erling Haaland to bolster their ranks. But when you've got a £100 million player in Jack Grealish who isn't part of your first 11 regularly, I don't really think you can complain too much about the resources available. I think Gabriel Jesus has got quite a key role to play now for the rest of the season. That might be easy to say after he scored 5 goals in his last 2 games, but he seems to be stepping up just as talk about a possible departure maybe to Arsenal has surfaced. So I agree with Matt. I think out of the 2 fixtures this weekend, this is the one you can say with most confidence, in my opinion, that the title chasers will prevail.
I would say that Jesse Marsh, you know, when he came in, there was a lot of people going, oh, why have they changed it? Bielsa should have just said, and he has made them more solid. Defensively, there's a bit more fight about them. They've been more difficult to beat. I think they might even be unbeaten in 5 leads at the moment. And since he's taken over, he's got 11 points in his 7 Premier League games. So he's actually done a decent job since he's taken over in making them tougher, I think, to beat than they had been. So it is a more difficult game in that respect. But Man City have got so much quality to break you down. I mean, Sam, we were at that game, the game against Brighton. And for the first half, in many ways, Man City were fairly laboured. You know, it wasn't a vintage Man City performance, but they grind you down, And De Bruyne at the moment is on a different... We talked earlier about Thiago, about the level that he's playing at for Liverpool. Kevin De Bruyne at the moment is at the top level for Man City. The way he's playing, the way he's dragging them along, I think Pep described him as the best player in transition.
Yeah, he did. In the world, he said. He said that to me in the tunnel. In the tunnel after the game that we were at on Wednesday night, yeah.
Yeah, he described him as that best player in transition in the world. And when they're defending, that break, that counter-attack, the way he drives the team, the passes he picks, the vision he's got, he just sees things that others don't, and he's just, at the moment, dragging City along.
Leeds still have plenty of work to do, actually, to ensure safety, but Matt's right. 5 games without defeat. They beat Norwich, they beat Wolverhampton Wanderers, which was a good victory away from home, but it was very, very late. Drew with Southampton, beat Watford away. Who doesn't? Crystal Palace 0, Leeds 0 was Monday night's score. And they are combative. They're a bit more robust. And they managed to rile up the most laid-back man in the world in Patrick Vieira this week, Matt.
Yeah, dirty Leeds. And they did what they had to do. They ground out a result. And they've taken a valuable point because their fixtures, the next 3, they've got this one against Man City. Then they travel to Arsenal, and then they've got Chelsea at Ellen Road as well. So the next 3 fixtures are really difficult ones. So that was a really valuable point against Crystal Palace, just to get, you know, nudge them that little bit further to safety. And then they've got 2 games to finish against Brighton and Brentford. Brighton at home, Brentford away. So they're the 2 games that they'll be looking at as you know, the ones that they need to win and keep them safe. But because the next 3 are really difficult, and as I say, I think they did exactly what they needed to do at Crystal Palace, just to drag that point and just take them that little bit closer to safety.
Yeah, you don't fear for them relegation wise, do you, Matt?
Who knows? I mean, who knows? Because the way, you know, Burnley have picked up results, 7 points from 9. The way they, mind you, Everton at the moment, their fixture list as well, and where they're at. I think Leeds will be safe, but these next 3 are tough matches. And you know, if they lose all 3, for instance, they go into that Brighton game under real pressure to win it.
Aston Villa won't be relegated, I wouldn't have thought, but they aren't as comfortable as they might have been after 5 games without a win. But they should get back to winning ways against Dr. Norwich, who usually make everyone feel better, Crook.
Yeah, the Dean Smith derby. This is a perfect opportunity for Villa, as you say, but only 8 points clear at the relegation places. You might know better than me, Sam. 15th in the table. Where were they when Dean Smith was sacked? I don't think the league position is drastically different. We had a heated debate. I've alluded to it already about Steven Gerrard when he started at Villa and wasn't winning many games. You said, yeah, but look at the standard of calibre, including Manchester United, by the way, they struggled to beat in that FA Cup game. Look at that now. And you were defending Steven Gerrard.
Yes.
I think it's been a poor appointment so far when you look at the league table.
Listen, the problem with you is you assess you're very binary. You're one of these new people that goes on Twitter and has a black or a white opinion. You don't look at the nuance. And the fact is that Aston Villa obviously got much better when he turned up. They competed with some of the very best. They created some great chances. They had some injury problems. They've got some good players in the door. Now they're in a situation where their season was over in beginning of February, basically. They knew they weren't going to get relegated in February. And they knew they weren't going to get into the top half of the table because of the bad start in February. So the rest of the season has been a little bit of a meh. There's not really much to worry about. As a result of that, performances have tailed off a little bit and they're planning for next season. Watch them next season. As I said during the heated debate, which you lost, you see how they develop over the course of the next 6 months, the first 6 months of next season, you'll see a very different side. So they'll be fine. They've got some good players. They'll get better players. The one thing they haven't got is a lot of goals, Matt. And despite having Ings, Watkins, Coutinho, Bailey, they failed to score at Villa Park in three of their last four matches at home. That would be a little bit of a concern, I think.
Yeah, it would. I was at Stamford Bridge and we had a bit of a conflab between a few commentators who were Aston Villa fans.
Rob Hawthorne.
Right. I didn't want to name names. I wasn't trying to name names. There was two or three Aston Villa fans and they were sort of just debating about what's going wrong, what's happening at Aston Villa. And the name Coutinho came up a little bit as well, as just to say how he's gone off the boil a little bit. Is it worth them spending the money that it's going to take to bring him to Villa Park long-term? Has he stifled the impact of Buendia? Because you know him coming into the side has meant that Buendia isn't in the team. So there was a bit of debate about the future of Coutinho between them, whether they should keep him or not. And that's something is not affecting games enough. Now, the argument might be that there's players maybe not on his wavelength, don't quite understand what he's trying to do, and he's seeing things that they're not seeing. And so there's that argument that he's maybe better in a better team. But There was definitely a debate about Coutinho, so that's a little bit of a worry for them. They finished 55 points last year. They finished 11th. They're a long way off that this season. This has been a disappointing campaign for Aston Villa, and I don't think Steven Gerrard will be particularly pleased with the way things have gone, particularly in recent weeks. Now, good news that Jacob Ramsey signed a new deal. That's he's a player that's going to be a big player for them.
Yeah, I like him a lot.
I like him a lot as well. He's got a bit of everything, hasn't he? He takes you forward and he's a terrific talent. So some good aspects about Matty Cash, I think, has been outstanding for them as well at right back this season. I think he's been brilliant. But there's a lot of work for Steven Gerrard to do this summer, and there's a lot of decisions to be made. And so, yes, they'll be safe. This is a game that they'll enjoy because they're up against Dean Smith, former Aston Villa manager, and it's his first time, I think, back to Villa. So it's a game that they should enjoy, and you'd fancy themselves to score a few in this one. But it's a big summer for Steven Gerrard to turn this around.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Yes, the Sunday session comes live from Goodison Park this Sunday afternoon, and Everton could find themselves 5 points behind Burnley before kickoff. Now, they did all right, actually, in the Merseyside derby, and I suppose that is their best hope, isn't it? Playing in a basic, structured, resolute way, hoping to nick something in this game and then trying to put points on the board. So in the sort of so-called easier fixtures, how much does scoreboard pressure play a part at this stage, though, Matthew?
Yeah, it absolutely does. You know, I've been in relegation battles, and when you play a game, you come back in the dressing room, and automatically the first thing you do is, how's such and such got on? How's such and such got on? And invariably, when you've won, everyone else has won. Invariably, when you've lost, everyone else has lost. And you think, oh, if only we'd got 3 points a day, we'd have been up. And honestly, it's a horrible feeling when you're in that position and you're looking around at what others are doing, and you do worry about what the other side's doing.
Does it affect you in games itself?
If things aren't going well, you can feel it. You can sense it. The crowd sense it. There's a nervousness about the place. And I think it's easier then to perhaps take the easier options, to try and do things safe. And that's, you know, something that Everton did a little bit at Anfield, didn't they? Because, you know, they reverted to a defensive structure. They reverted to get men behind the ball. And it's the hard thing is then to be able to turn that into an attacking performance, to turn it into a more positive, open game. And I think when you're in that position at the bottom, you tend to be a bit safer and not go for your passes, not go for try things that, because there's a nervousness about the place. And particularly at home, I think that's more evident. And actually, Everton's form has been better at home than it has away.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they've been much better and dealt with that pressure a little bit better at home. The fans are brilliant. The Everton fans, honestly, they are some of the best fans in the league. The way they stick with the team and the way they back your team. And you know, I think that the players recognise that. And I think the fans have helped them a little bit at Goodison Park. But they're in trouble. They're in big, big trouble. I wouldn't say with any certainty that they're going to stay up now. About 3 months ago, if you'd have asked me, Everton, they'll be in relegation trouble, they'll be in the bottom three, they'll be on the verge of going down. I thought, no, they'll be all right. I think they've got good enough players, Richarlison, Calvert-Lewin. I just think they'll be okay. I think they'll get enough points. Now I'm looking at it thinking, I'm not sure they are, because Burnley have turned it around. Leeds are fighting and scrapping. I'm not sure they are going to get out of it.
You shouldn't worry, because Crook's already told us that the relegation situation is done and dusted. It's finished. Burnley.
Is it who's down?
Burnley, Watford and Norwich. He's already told us. He said, don't worry about it. Everton are too good and they'll stay up. He's already told us about this. And I was sitting in the background going, I'm not sure. I'm worried about Everton. I don't want Everton to go down, but I'm worried about Everton because I can see it. You know, they've got Chelsea at home, then they've got away to Leicester, go away to Watford. They've got Brentford at home, Palace at home, and finished with Arsenal. Burnley have got Watford, then they've got Villa at home, Spurs away, Villa away again, then Newcastle. I mean, the fixtures, I mean, it's a toss of a coin stuff, isn't it, really?
Well, based on what you've just read out there, you'd say that Burnley's fixtures look a little bit more favourable than Everton's. And they have sleptwalked into it in some ways, Everton, because I think a lot of people, probably even within the club, felt the same as me. There would be three worse teams than Everton. But it's the lack of goals, isn't it? We don't know if Dominic Calvert-Lewin will be fit for this game at the weekend. I mean, his injuries and his poor form this season has been a major factor. You know, you think how many goals he scored last season. He started the campaign well, then got injured and has never really been able to get fit. Richarlison flits in and out in terms of form. I saw Chelsea last weekend labour to victory. Wasn't particularly impressed. I thought Havertz was quite poor. Werner, well off it. Lukaku just looked out of shape when he came on. So I don't see Chelsea as being a side who will necessarily put Everton to the sword. But the counter to that is, where are the goals coming from for the home team? I know they've been working doubly hard on set pieces on the training ground. Paul Clement, one of Frank Lampard's backroom staff, has really put a lot of focus on that, because they aren't getting goals from dead ball situations either. So as Matt said, it's a big problem for Everton. And as we sit here now, I can't say with any certainty that Everton will stay up, particularly not when you look at the two sets of fixtures. So
there is a pervading narrative that a lot I mean, there is a school of thought that there are some people, the majority of people, actually really want Everton to go down and Frank Lampard to suffer because they don't believe that he deserved to get the job in the first place. He's not qualified for the job. Why should he have got it? He's been overpromoted into a position that he hasn't warranted. I read an article the other day which was scathing. It basically just said, I'm delighted that Everton are in this situation and that I hope that they go down because of this, that and the other. And I was like, why? Why do people not like Frank Lampard? Why do people not like the idea of someone who has been a Premier League stalwart? He's played in the league for 15, 16 years. He's been a great ambassador for the sport. He's never really done anything that has been anti-football or anything controversial to sort of put himself on the front pages rather than the back. I mean, there was the incident, I think, when he was a kid with Kieran Dyer and Ferdinand. I think that was like 30
years ago. Long time
ago
now.
Yeah, it was a long time. But seriously, this has been pretty much a model professional ever since coming into the Chelsea team. He's won everything. He's been a part of some of the great Chelsea moments, Premier League moments, England moments. He went and played for Manchester City for a year and they love him up there. So what is it about Frank Lampard and Everton that people were taking a little bit of joy in? I don't really understand it.
For me, I think it's more about Everton than about Frank Lampard. When you look at the money they've spent, maybe the delusions of grandeur that some of their fans have. And for me, this season, they hounded out Benitez. I think if Benitez had stayed, they wouldn't be in this situation because he started the season well. They looked like they had a tactical plan. They were well organised. Then he got hit with injury to key personnel. I think he would have turned it around. Then they were going to appoint Vito Pereira. There was graffiti put up outside Goodison Park saying they didn't want Vito Pereira. So they've ended up with Frank Lampard, who I do agree with people who say, what qualifications does he have for this job? Okay, he did well at Chelsea for a season in very unique circumstances.
He didn't do too badly at Derby when you look at it now.
I don't think he did as well at Derby as people suggest. When you look at the players that he had at his disposal, I think they probably should have got promoted and they didn't. So I can understand why people don't feel that Frank Lampard necessarily has done the hard yards to be parachuted into what historically is one of the biggest clubs in the country.
Hold on. You say that about Derby County, right? But where have they been since he left? I mean, he got them to a playoff final. Have they got anywhere? I think they're in League One now, aren't they?
Yeah, but they imploded financially and maybe there's an argument to say that Frank Lampard played a part in that.
No, he didn't. He didn't spend any money. He bought most of his players in on loan, if you remember rightly.
What Mason Mount was there for 50 quid a week, was he?
No, but at the same time, he wasn't. You weren't paying full price for him, were you? And the same with Tomori, and the same with the others that he bought in on loan. And the fact
Harry
that
Wilson,
was,
they loaded the up fact, the wage bill.
The fact that he was there,
their wage bill was a lot bigger than
their
championship rivals
that they wouldn't have got otherwise, and they got it got them to win within a hair's breadth of getting promoted. Surely that the problem is that I think you sometimes, like I said it to you before, you're a little bit binary. It's either it has to be absolute success or is an abject failure. Sometimes it's a little bit in between, isn't it?
I don't think Everton would have gone down under Benitez. I think if they go down under Frank Lampard, he does have to shoulder a fair amount of responsibility.
What about the statistics that tell you that he hadn't won in about 400 games, Benitez, prior to his sacking?
That was a brave appointment. That was a brave appointment start of the season, wasn't it, with Benitez? And the connections that he had with Liverpool, it was always going to be one of those. He felt he had to get off to a good start. Fortunately for him, he did. But it turned sour, and because of those Liverpool connections, there was always going to be that little bit in the background. You know, having played for Ipswich and any sort of Norwich connection that comes to the club, automatically they're under more pressure straight away because of that Norwich connection. And I think Benitez was exactly the same. My problem with Frank Lampard is that he meant I got released at West Ham when I was 20, and he came through ahead of me. And you've seen everyone's seen the video.
You want him to fail.
Me and Scotty Cannon, we got bombed out at West Ham and Frank Lampard got into the first team. That's my problem with him.
Look, they've got to start winning games because drawing them isn't going to be enough. Their best hope is that they are better at home. They're infinitely better at home. But Chelsea have had their own issues and much better on the road. And they've had a free midweek for the first time in a long time. But Everton have failed to score in four of their last eight matches, as Crookie says. That is a problem. Goals have been a major issue for Frank Lampard and his team. Everything's an issue for Watford, who take on Burnley on Saturday at 3 p.m. Mike Jackson couldn't have got luckier with the fixtures if he'd tried. If there was one team he'd be desperate to face this weekend, it would be lethargic, casual, easy to cut open Watford. Any hope for Everton fans here? come on, someone make a case for them. Try and help them out. do you know, silence is golden.
A few weeks ago, Sean Dyche got sacked, and people were going, madness.
Yes.
My initial reaction was one of not being surprised at that decision. Now, clearly it was a fallout. The timing of it was strange, how close it was to a weekend. It raised a few eyebrows. It raised my eyebrows because of that. But it's not like he hasn't had a chance at Burnley. He's done a really good job, admittedly. But they were going down with Sean Dyche in charge. They were absolutely going out the Premier League. So why not make a change and try and do something different? I felt it was actually a brave call, yes, but I thought it was the right call to get rid of Sean Dyche. They may still go down, but they were going down with Sean Dyche in charge.
Yeah, they've given themselves a chance now.
They've given themselves a chance. They were going down, honestly, with Sean Dyche in charge. So I have no problem with them getting rid of him at the time that they got rid of him.
It's something that Perry and I discussed on Sunday, and we were quite big on the fact that they played Norwich a couple of weeks ago and they were absolutely useless. Like,
I was at the game.
Proper useless. Terrible. And that we couldn't see how they were going to turn it around from there. And we got a bit of stick from Burnley fans who said we're watching a different game and they had loads of shots on goal and all this kind of stuff. And we were like, no, they were rubbish. And they're playing Norwich. You've got to go and beat Norwich if you want to stay in the Premier League.
They had the Cornet chance, didn't they?
Yeah.
If that goes in, it's a different game, of course, but... Yeah, and he didn't score, and Norwich got the second. That was it. But
and then they sacked him after that. And like, I must admit, when I first saw, well, why have you done that? What plan have you got in place? And when it was so close to the next game, I thought, this is just someone who's just thrown the toys out of the pram, and they've fallen out, and they've gone. You're fired. They've got no plan going forward. That is a worry for me at this stage of the season that you haven't got anybody to come in and sort out the team. Now they might have stumbled something on Mike Jackson because he's picked up 7 points since taking over. But it doesn't really matter whether they have stumbled over it or not, because as you say, they've done something, they've affected change, and it has given them a little bit of hope. Watford have conceded 39 goals in 16 home league games, which is astonishing.
You know, what's astonishing, Sam, is that they had the best defence last season in English football, Watford.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, in the Championship last season.
They've changed it now. Defense. Changed it for the worst. I mean, that Samir fella, I mean, Christ. He doesn't know his backside from his elbow, does he?
I've said it before, their recruitment in January was poor. I mean, you've just mentioned one of the signings that they made, but I think also
I like Kamara, the left back. I think he'd be all right.
I'm not overly enamoured with him either, to be honest. But the point that Matt's just made about them having the best defensive record in the country last season, I think that highlights the gap between the Premier League and the Championship. We got Fulham coming back into the Premier League next season. Tim Ream was man of the match in the game that I saw at Bournemouth last weekend. He's played every league game. We already know that he won't cut the mustard in the Premier League, because every time they get promoted, he starts the season, makes some errors and gets dropped. I've spoken to people at other clubs competing for promotion for the Championship, and they think that all three teams who come up this season, whoever they may be, and it's still wide open, will come straight back down again. I think it's a problem, the increasing gap between the Premier League and the Championship. Obviously, Brentford have bucked that trend this season. I think they'll struggle next season, particularly if they lose Christian Eriksen. But in terms of this game, Watford are down. This is a massive opportunity for Burnley, as you say, to put that scoreboard pressure on Everton. I wouldn't rule out an away win here. And to back up what Matt was saying, I think we all scratched our heads more at the timing of the Sean Dyche departure, not because it was after the Norwich game, but because it was so long after the Norwich game. I think if he'd gone on the Monday or the Tuesday, you could have said, look, they were dreadful, they were going down, this is a good call. I don't think the owners did have a plan in place. I think they've stumbled upon this caretaker management team. Their plan was to appoint an interim boss until the end of the season, a firefighting type manager. I don't think they'll do that now, and that's credit to Mike Jackson and Ben Mee and the rest of the guys who've come in, because they have been able to bring about an immediate change of fortunes and change of performance. So credit to them.
Have you spoke to any Watford fans this week? Has anyone spoke to a Watford fan this week? I've got a few on social who have been clutching at straws, telling me that the goal they scored at the Etihad was a thing of beauty. And it was. It was a good team goal in a 5-1 defeat. well, any rumours about who might bring them back up when Roy retires?
Sean Dyche, maybe. Actually, I was speaking to a Watford fan in the aftermath of Dyche's sacking, and she was saying, oh, people saying he'll come to Watford. They've already sacked him once. And I said, well, that means he's got a fantastic chance of getting a job again, because that's how they do business. But I think he is the type of manager that they need. I think it's quite a sad end to Roy Hodgson's career, and I wonder if you spoke to him honestly, if he regrets going back in now, because you don't want to end such a stellar career with relegation. And they are going down with a whimper. And again, I think we all felt when he was appointed that he would be able to bring around a turnaround in results. That just hasn't happened.
West Ham against Arsenal is Sunday, 4:30, and it's not what West Ham needed in the middle of a seismic semi-final with Eintracht Frankfurt, but they take on Arsenal, who have revived their top four hopes. I thought they rode their luck, actually, a little bit against Manchester United, but they stay together as a team, and he's been good at bringing the ones he wants into the tent, Mikel Arteta. I wonder now, because of the two big results against Chelsea and United, ultimately, whatever happens, he's going to be okay, isn't he, Matt?
How do you mean okay? As in, what, finishing the top four?
Well, no, I think that in January, they were so far ahead of everybody else, January, February, so far ahead of everybody else in that top four position that they had it in their own hands. They threw it away. They've managed to claw it back again. But now, because they've beaten Chelsea, they've beaten United, there is a bit of a feel-good factor around Arsenal for whatever reason that actually, I mean, people are starting to be drawn into the cult of Mikel. Even I was like in the tunnel on Saturday afternoon, and I was like, you know, great fella, yeah, I understand what he's trying to do. He's pulling me into it as well. You know, then no one's going to get rid of him now, is what I mean. I think, you know, if they had continued on that downward trajectory and lost to Man United and failed to beat Chelsea, then they would have been in a situation now where Tottenham had almost secured fourth place already. Then I think maybe you would have looked at him and gone, nah, I'm sorry, he's just not up to it. But now I think everyone's thinking, oh, you know, there's something about this guy.
It's interesting with Arteta and what he's done this year and what he's... I think the priority this season has been to get the right dressing room, get the right people, to get the people who are going to come along with him. Not people who are going to necessarily question him, totally. Not people who are necessarily not going to do the work, not necessarily going to put the effort in to get Arsenal to where they want to be, which is in the Champions League, because they haven't done that for quite some time. So I think his priority this season was to try and generate an atmosphere around the club, a positive atmosphere where you weren't having one or two individuals bringing it down and having a negative effect on a group, and particularly big individuals. Big name individuals.
But Matt, there's not many managers or many head coaches that get a situation where they're appointed in 2019 and then in 2022 they're still sorting out the problems. I mean, look, that shows how big the job was.
But Sam, it's a long-term job.
I totally agree with you, but not many other places allow that to happen.
Well, so we're talking about Man United getting a new manager this summer, Erik ten Hag.
Is this a blueprint for him?
All I keep hearing is, got to give him time. Got to give him the chance to get rid of the players that he doesn't want, change the atmosphere at the club. Now, how long is that going to take?
By the looks of it, 3 years.
Well, 3 years. So all of a sudden, we're talking about Arteta. You just said there, 2019 to 2022. We're now 3 years into it. If he finishes in the Champions League positions this season, people will say, well, he's had that time. He's done this. He's done that. It's the youngest team in the Premier League now.
Yep.
All these signings in the summer were 23 and under. He's made a deliberate attempt to make it a younger group, an energetic, fresh group. He's had players come through the system into the first team. He's promoted them into the first team, and it's taken time. It isn't something that's happened overnight. Sir Alex Ferguson didn't win anything for 5 years at Man United. It took him that long he started at the bottom, started with the academy and built it. Now, Erik ten Hag at Man United is going to be in the same position. Are we 18 months' time, Man United are going to be sat sixth and they're still not quite happening? It's not, you know, they've not done this, they've not done that. But then are we trusting Erik ten Hag then to do it? So this is what Arsenal have done. They've trusted Mikel Arteta.
They've trusted the process.
I knew he was going to say that. You absolutely teed him up for that one.
I didn't want to say the process. There's a number of words and stuff in football that I don't like, but trusting the process. Look, he's had his time. I think he's done a decent job. I think he's ridded the club of people that he needed to, I think, personally. And I think he's got a good, young, fresh, energetic group. It's not perfect. It's not right. It's still not a team that's going to challenge for titles. But it's a team that now are pushing for Champions League football when actually they've gone eighth, fifth, whatever it is, and now they're looking at potentially finishing fourth.
I actually think next season could be a problem for Arteta, because sometimes you can be victim of your own success. I think they are favourites to finish in the top four now. I think they'll win this game against West Ham. I think it's perfect timing. given that it's sandwiched between the two legs of the semi-final for the Hammers and the fact that they are no longer candidates for a place in the Champions League. But they get a big back in the Champions League next season. Therefore, they're going to try and attract a higher caliber of players. I still think that's difficult when you look at the financial structure at Arsenal and the fact that we know that Mikel Arteta can't necessarily deal with big egos. I think it'll be more difficult to cement their place in the top four next season, because if Conte stays, Tottenham will be a much more formidable outfit. Manchester United simply have to improve under Ten Hag. They can't get any worse. So if Arsenal find themselves seventh in the table and getting hammered in the Champions League, I think those fans will quite quickly turn on Mikel Arteta.
Tottenham against Leicester is also this weekend. And this is a big game for Tottenham Hotspur, isn't it? Because someone's got to shoot at the actual goal, Matt.
Yeah, two games without a shot on target. It's incredible, really, isn't it? When just as you thought they were the team that were going to finish fourth, that they've have a couple of games like they've just had. So it's frustrating, I think, from Antonio Conte's point of view. It's a good fixture for them, I think, particularly with Leicester in between two European semi-finals as well. And I think, you know, I look at Leicester, I look at West Ham. Their priorities have changed, you know, this season and over the course of the season. You get to this stage, you know, David Moyes made six changes at Chelsea last week, rested Declan Rice, rested Jarrod Bowen, rested Mikel Antonio because of the semi-final. And Leicester are in a similar position now.
I'm pleased in a way, because I was worried that David Moyes was starting to try and still, you know, because he's been juggling all season, trying to keep everybody happy and put, you know,
for a period, Sam, there was still a chance of them finishing the top four.
Yeah, but now that's gone. He had to concentrate on the Eintracht Frankfurt games.
Definitely. So there was a period whereas Leicester, for a long time, they've been chopping and changing for the European games anyway.
Yeah.
Their priority has been the Europa Conference League. So they've climbed the table a little bit, I think they're in the top half of the table now, they still have had the priority of Europe. And so in that respect, I think that's a good fixture for Spurs.
Yeah. Tottenham Hotspur obviously scored quite a lot of goals at home, which is another big thing for them. We're going to send Perry Groves to this game on Sunday, in disguise, obviously. 13 goals in their last four home league matches. Maybe it's just away from home they've got a little bit sticky, Crook.
How do you disguise Perry Groves? He's quite a distinctive character, isn't he? What's the outfit going to be?
A big hat, definitely. Some glasses, a fake moustache.
Can we dress him as Mikel Arteta?
Yeah, you could dress him as Mikel Arteta, Captain Scarlet.
Get him a T-shirt. We trust the process. Yeah. I think Tottenham will be frustrated that they're no longer favourites for the top four, because when you look at the points they've dropped, you know, 0-0 against Brentford. Okay, Brentford on a good run of form, but if you're serious about qualifying for the Champions League, surely that is a game with the attacking talents you have to win. Brighton at home, at a time when Brighton couldn't themselves get too many shots on target, let alone score any goals. So I think it's been a frustrating couple of matches. I agree with Matt. I think this is a good time to be welcoming Leicester, because obviously it's huge for Leicester, their first ever European semi-final, and Brendan Rodgers will make changes, we know that. But it's still, the onus will still be on Tottenham to go out and win the game, because Leicester will still be competitive. But even when he has made changes, they've still managed to pull off a couple of wins with their second string. So Tottenham need to get their mojo back, and they need to get it back quickly, because I think we all want to see a North London showdown in that rearranged game the final week of the season to determine who finishes in the top four.
And this game comes before the Arsenal fixture at West Ham as well. So win and they're in the top four. And we talked about scoreboard pressure. Arsenal then are looking at it thinking, we're outside the top four now.
Yep.
Okay, before we go, I want you to try and help me out here, because I need a bit of aid. Come to my aid, because speed is everything. Southampton play Crystal Palace this weekend, and Wolves against Brighton also this weekend. Both of them kick off at 3 o'clock on Saturday. Could you please help me out by finding something interesting to say about either of these two games, please? Crook?
Difficult. The archetypal end of season dead rubbers, although Brighton still have ambitions to finish in the top half of the table. That would be success for them. Wolves could still finish in the European places. They're only 3 points behind West Ham with a game in hand, so there's plenty to play for them. And in terms of Southampton, I just think we'd all send our best wishes to Tino Livramento, one of the breakout players of the season. Horrible injury that he picked up last weekend. Confirmed.
Such a shame, isn't it?
Confirmed it's an ACL, won't play again probably this calendar year. And I think that will change Southampton's transfer plans for the summer, because they're not blessed in the fullback areas anyway in terms of depth. So some work to do for Ralph Arsenhutel on the board.
Only Norwich, Burnley and Watford have scored fewer goals than Wolverhampton Wanderers this season. They play Brighton this weekend. They also draw quite a lot of games though, Brighton. Then you can see this being another draw. I mean, I on Sunday I was like, Southampton versus Brighton, it's got draw written all over it. And it was. They draw almost every other game, Brighton.
Yeah, it does look like a draw. But listen, a draw, right, so I'm going to give you something exciting.
Okay.
A draw takes Brighton onto 42 points,
wow,
which would be a club record in the Premier League.
Wow, fantastic. Well done. Oh, no, sorry, wrong one. Well done. I like that. That was good. And you did it with so much energy. And Southampton against Crystal Palace. Both teams have scored in each of their last five Premier League meetings between the two at St Mary's. So it could be an entertaining game. Are you going to that, Crook?
No, I've been diverted to Plymouth, actually. I was due to... First of all, I was at Southampton Palace.
That sounds like a crap holiday story. Oh, I was coming back from Lanzarote and I was diverted to Plymouth.
First of all, I wasn't. Then I was bumped up to Watford Burnley because of the magnitude of the fixture. And now I've been sent to Plymouth against MK Dons because there is a possibility that MK Dons can nick an automatic promotion place and find themselves in the Championship next season.
How is Plymouth versus MK Dons bigger than Watford Burnley?
Well, that's a question for those of a higher pay grade than me.
I think you've been downgraded. You've been demoted.
I think there's a common misconception that because Portsmouth and Plymouth are both coastal towns, that when they play each other, it's some kind of derby, and therefore it's not a long journey for me. I'll tell you what, it's 178
miles
from Portsmouth to Plymouth. Let's just hope they don't end up in the Championship, because I'm not going there every other week. I can tell you that for
Watford is nearer, definitely.
Honestly, how big time's Crookie got?
Oh, I'm not going there every week. It's too far for me.
I'm not going to Plymouth.
If they're in the Championship, I'm not doing that.
Make sure the bosses hear this on the podcast.
Hey, I'm bigger than that, aren't I? Oh, dear. Sending me down to Plymouth. What are they? Undervaluing me or something?
Undervalued.
Undervalued.
To find players that they believe are undervalued. Yeah?
No.
Undervalued.
You're a
Please leave that in.
She will, don't worry. She'll just bleep it out. Thank you very much. Cheers, Matt. Appreciate your time.
Cheers, Sam.
Crookie, thank you very much. We'll see you over the weekend. We're back on Sunday when we're going visual again on Sunday for our podcast. And we're actually going to allow Crookie to appear on camera this week. So can you make sure you tidy yourself up?
That's if I'm back from Plymouth in time for Sunday night,
by the way.
Yeah, that's
true. Yeah, okay. That'll be out on Monday morning when you wake up, and then we'll review all of the weekend's footballing action from the Premier League. Thank you very much for downloading the Game Day podcast from TalkSport. Remember, we've got live games from Newcastle and from Leeds this Saturday. Newcastle against Liverpool and Leeds against Manchester City. The top two are live on TalkSport.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.